At the end of the previous lesson, 017, I had you build a bench supply. I don't know what it's going to look like. That's up to you. It's not the kind of thing that I care about all that much anyway. But we'll assume that you built the thing, and we'll assume that it can probably deliver 20 volts, regularly, tightly regulated. I gave an example in there that was really more or less targeted at 12 volts. I expected you to build one. A somewhat higher voltage than I used. And of course, I didn't tell you until now that you needed it. Presumably, you listened to the gist of the next lesson before you built the thing. And if not, well, you're resourceful, I'm sure. Or you went out and you found one in a surplus store real cheap. A nice little variable power supply that would go 0 to 25 volts or something like that. Maybe even had multiple voltages, some of them do. Makes them more expensive that way. But we'll assume that you've got some kind of a nice, homebrew or otherwise, variable power supply that you can power this thing with. It's designed such that at 10 volts is really its operating voltage, and I'll get into that later as to why that is. I'm going to cover some new concepts for you. Things that you've never been introduced before, or to before. Transistors, they come in two flavors, basically. You've got NPN and PNP. And in the previous lessons, I've kind of covered that, explaining that the polarities are all reversed. But you've probably never seen two of them, or two of the differing types, used in the same circuit. And you can, there's all kinds of combinations that you can do, wiring them together, as you're going to see in the next experiment. Not this one that I'm talking about now, but the next one gets pretty carried away. But NPN and PNP transistors, you can look at them in isolation from their counterpart. You can break them down to a little circuit block, which I'm going to get into a little bit later, and you can view them as common emitter or common base or common collector amplifiers in isolation from the rest of the circuit, and then add in whatever the effects of the rest of the circuit are afterwards. It kind of helps to visualize what the transistor is doing in the circuit, whichever configuration is appropriate for the way it's wired, of course. Okay, there's a new component that I've introduced in this thing, the VN01 MOSFET. Now, this is a real generic part. It doesn't have, a lot of, in other words, I'm not expecting the MOSFET to have, high voltage or high current or really tightly controlled threshold voltage and things like that. So this is just sort of a garden variety FET, and if you, but it is a MOSFET. It's an enhancement mode MOSFET. It does have to be that for the circuit to work. It's just in a real simple, voltage follower kind of configuration, which is analogous to an emitter follower. And the other term for it, an emitter follower, of course, is a common collector. An emitter follower, basically, you put a voltage into the base, and you get the same voltage out the emitter minus some offset. And the offset for a silicon transistor is always 7/10 of a volt, approximately, and depending on temperature and so forth. Well, the threshold voltage on a MOSFET, which isn't the same thing as junction drop in a diode or a transistor, the threshold voltage, that's a little bit more nebulous. It's not as tightly controlled as it is with a transistor. And it can be kind of all over the place, and it varies from transistor to transistor, lot number to lot number, and that sort of thing. But in this particular instance, it don't make very much difference in the way the circuit operates. I've designed the circuit so that isn't much of a problem. Okay, we'll get back to that in a minute. I'm just trying to highlight some of the new things that you've not seen before. And now what I want to do is I want to try and break this thing up into individual blocks of circuitry that you would be more easily familiar with, or more easier to familiarize yourself with, and, and maybe has some reference to other concepts and so forth that you've built upon in the past. If you look at the 1N4148 diodes in series with a 3.3 k-ohm resistor and then in series with a 680 ohm resistor, and by the way, if you were to measure any of the voltages in that string, the voltages that I call out and the things I talk about are referenced to, unless I tell you otherwise, are referenced to circuit ground. The meter is shown connected to the output with its ground, with its common connection reference to ground. And the idea is that for most measurements, you just simply take the probe wire, in this case that's touching, making contact with the output, and you disconnect it from the output and poke around in various points of the circuit, and you can read, you know, voltages throughout the circuit. Of course, the meter will have some effect on those voltages depending on their impedance, and you're going to see in a little bit how drastic an effect that could be. But anyway, the idea is that for most measurements, your meter is connected to circuit ground. And you'll also notice that the power supply is connected to circuit ground. And you'll also notice that the 9-volt transistor radio battery is sort of connected to circuit ground. I mean, if you really take what I said literally in one of the earlier lessons where I talk about wires just being a common point, then that is true. It is connected to ground. But if you view wires as being slightly resistive elements in the circuit and slightly inductive and capacitive and so forth, which wires really are in the real world, then, of course, the battery is connected to a 470 ohm resistor, and then it is connected to ground. And that really is important in this case, because I'm taking into consideration wiring resistance and so forth. Okay, so getting back to this, the first circuit block is the 1N4148 diodes, the 3.3 k-ohm, and the 680 ohm resistor to ground. That's one circuit block. Another circuit block, or another major path for current to flow, is starting with a 200 ohm resistor on top, and coming down through the 2N3906 transistor's emitter, out its collector, into the 3904's collector, to its resistance, its emitter resistor of 200 ohms to ground. Another major path is from the 9-volt transistor radio's, the top of the 9-volt transistor radio battery, which is positive in this case. You know, I should have probably drawn that in there, but I didn't. I might change that before you see it. At any rate, the 9-volt transistor radio battery's positive connection is connected to the drain connection on the MOSFET, and that path of current goes down. Now, we're talking current flow here, all right, not electron flow, conventional current flow. It goes into the drain, through the silicon of the MOSFET, and through the source, through the 470 ohm resistor. The drain is marked with a D, the source with an S, and the little G stands for gate. And then back to the battery, and also connected to ground at that point. Okay, so that's the third major circuit block. Then there's the feedback blocks. There's two of those. One of them is the positive feedback block, which consists of the output of the whole circuit, which just happens to be the source of the MOSFET and the 470 k-ohm resistor. Those two points, you have 5.1 k-ohm branching off in one direction, going to a 1 mega-ohm resistor, feeding output back into the 200 ohm emitter resistor of the 2N3906, and that's actually a common. Well, you can look at that in many ways. You can look at that as a common emitter construction, but now by injecting signal into it, into that node, it becomes a common base amplifier, sort of. If you remember, the distinction between a common emitter and a common base amplifier is only where the signals go in and come out. And the other path of feedback is through a resistor that isn't really marked. It's there for you to experiment with. I suggested you start out at 10 kOhms in your experiments. You know, that's really kind of up in the air. You can play with that all you want. But that's basically the five major blocks of this circuit. And that goes, you know, from the 470 ohm resistor, or the source of the MOSFET, which is the output of the whole entire circuit, that goes through that resistor in the blue box back into the input of the whole circuit, which is the base of the 2N3904 common emitter configuration amplifier. Okay, now we back away from just outlining what the major blocks are, and I get into what they do. Going back to the two diodes and the 3.3K and the 680 ohm resistor, the two diodes are wired so that when you put positive into the circuit, as you dial up the pot on the on the bench supply, when you dial it up to 1.4 volts, 0 to 1.4 volts, the diodes are effectively open circuited because they don't forward bias until you get 7/10 on each. And whenever both of them get fully biased at 7/10 of a volt, as you dial past 1.4 volts, as you dial to 1.5 volts or thereabouts, you start to get a little bit of voltage on the cathode of the bottom 1N4148 diode. If you had your meter on there and you were watching for any small quiver of voltage to come through, as soon as you get past 1.4 volts, then the meter needle starts to rise. And as you continue rotating the knob, the meter needle responds following the voltage, but it's always following at 1.4 volts behind the actual power supply voltage. That then is ratio divided by the 3.3 kOhm 680 ohm resistor, and that's a fixed ratio. You can use Ohm's law to compute that. It's pretty mundane and simple. But the gist of all this is whenever you get the power supply up to 10 full volts, there will also be 1.4 volts drop across the base of the 2N3904. And that's significant. At 10 volts, which this circuit is intended to operate at 10 volts, all kinds of interesting interactive magic kind of takes place here. First of all, let's back off just a little bit and look at the next block of circuitry. The 2N3906 is effectively an upside-down common emitter construction. And by upside-down, what I mean is that because its emitter is a positive, it's a PNP transistor, its emitter expects a positive voltage to come into the emitter, is coming in through the 200-ohm resistor, the 1.4-volt drop of the diodes puts a forward bias on its base. And if its collector is not in saturation, okay, which it probably isn't if this circuit is working, no guarantee of that, but and I'll get to that later, but we'll just assume that the collector has a low enough voltage on it that the transistor is clearly not in saturation, then that little bit of circuitry there is going to produce from the positive, in other words, if you were measuring, not from ground, but if you were measuring from the positive power supply to the emitter, there will be a 7/10 drop. And the reason there's 7/10 drops is because you start with 1.4 volts, then you have the internal drop, which goes back toward the power supply of the emitter base junction of the 2N3906, and what's left over, what gets dropped across the resistor, is now 7/10 of a volt. And beta says that one beta if that, you know, the beta is some number, so one beta if of that current is flowing actually in the 560 ohm resistor, and the rest of it is coming from the collector. So for the most part, the collector is a constant current source to the positive supply. Now, constant current sources are really strange animals. If you know, you're used to voltage, you're used to what voltage does to circuits, and current, you know, it's part of the math. You can do it with Ohm's law, but it, whenever you see it in real action, current sources, they do what the math says that they do, but they're strange. Which you're gonna see a lot of that in this circuit. Okay, now let's look at the bottom half of the circuit. We will assume, for the most part, that the voltage on the, and this is again ground referenced voltage, we will assume that the voltage on the 2N3904's collector is high enough that the 2N3904 itself is never in saturation. And if that's the case, then voltage coming into the base of the 2N3904, if the power supply is at 10 volts, will be 1.4 volts. And again, just like in the PNP case, only this was a right side up common emitter construction. In the case of the PNP, the 2N3904 NPN transistor, its base has 1.4 volts on it. There's a base emitter junction of 0.7, and what you get across the 200 ohm resistor is another 0.7. So basically, the current, when you get right at 10 volts, the current that the 2N3904 is pulling down, assuming its collector is something greater than, say, 1 volt, as long as its collector is, 1 volt or more, and it's therefore not in saturation. I mean, that 1 volt I pulled out of the air, but it's real obvious that it's not saturated, if that's the case. Then the emitter is producing 0.7 of a volt in the 200 ohm resistor, and therefore the current is at the whim of the voltage on the base, for the most part, as it was in the other one. Well, you now have, when you get at 10 volts, when you're right at 10 volts, you now have a situation where both the transistors are pulling with 3.5 milliamps. This is 0.7 divided by 200 ohm. Pretty simple. But below 3.5 milliamps, the PNP transistor is a constant current source that's regulated by the diode drops of the 1N4148s. So as you dial below 10, say your bench supply is sitting at 8 volts and you're coming up to 9 volts and you're coming up to toward 10, as long as you're below that point, the 2N3904 transistor is less than 3.5 milliamps. And the result of two constant current sources fighting each other in this way, the 2N3906 is trying to pull the voltage up, and the 2N3904 is trying to pull the voltage down. The two of those fighting each other this way results in the 2N3906 always winning the battle. And as a result, the 2N3906 is actually in saturation, and the voltage is swung all the way, or pretty darn close, to the positive rail. So, as you're 8 volts, you're reading a full output. In fact, anything above, say, about 3 volts, your output that you measure on the meter, less the threshold voltage of the MOSFET, so you probably have to get up to about 3 or 4 volts before you see anything at all. But once you see that, as you turn up the knob on the bench supply, the output of the circuit will mirror that change as you go up toward 10. You get up to 8 volts, you get up to 9 volts, it just keeps coming up with you. And whenever you get to 10 volts, all of a sudden something very different happens. When you get to 10 volts, the bias voltage that's been coming across the 680 ohm resistor has been going up ratiometrically because of the 3.3 and 680 ohm, they're in series. And so the base voltage coming into the 2N3904 has been coming up, and whenever it gets right at 1.4 volts, it now has enough current in its collector that it balances the current in the top one. Okay, I'm not going to tell you what happens there. I'm going to tell you what happens if you go a little bit farther than that. You get up to about 10.2 volts, or wherever that magic threshold is. Whenever you get ever so slightly more than 10, what ends up happening is now the 2N3904 has more current in its collector than the 2N3906, and the result is that they kind of change operation. The 2N3904 becomes saturated, turned on hard, and the 2N3906 is now clearly not in saturation. It's clearly in regulation, but its output voltage is pretty close to zero. Okay, now if you back the knob back down to wherever that point was, we're going to assume it's 10, because that's where the circuit's designed for, but your components, your mileage will vary, as they say. Your components aren't going to be exactly as the ones that are in here, very unlikely. So if you get back down to, say, 10 volts, we'll assume that's where the threshold is, well, what happens there? Well, the little bit of threshold that you can twist the knob on that power supply is really, really small before the thing, you know, goes either to the positive rail, the output goes either to the positive rail, or the output swings to the negative rail. Now, there's several things going on here. For one thing, the impedance of this portion of the circuit, the point where the two collectors and the gate of the MOSFET all tie together, is an infinite impedance. Constant current sources do not have an impedance. They're an open circuit, technically. They're just a current, and a current is not really any kind of a resistance. And having said that, the gain of this circuit is much like any other common emitter circuit. You divide the numbers of the collector impedance by the emitter impedance, and the result of doing that is your gain. Except that your collector impedance in this case really is infinity. Okay? And infinity divided by anything is still infinity. So you get gains that are just unwieldy high. You know. In fact, this amplifier can be made so sensitive that it defies being able to quantify the gain that you really get. Okay. Now, I have to back off a little bit. And the realities of this is because this is you're using real parts here, you know, real transistors, and real transistors have beta that isn't infinite, and there's impedances and things involved, there's resistances within the circuit that you have to start considering. And so the current sources that I've got for you here are not true currents, or they're close, they're almost current, but they have a little bit of inherent impedance in them. And well, as it turns out, just a smidgen of positive feedback can cancel out those effects for the whole circuit. And so what I've done is I've put a 5.1 k-ohm and a 1 mega-ohm in series and created a feedback loop that goes from the output to the, from the output of the circuit to the point where the 2N3906 PNP transistor and the 200 ohm emitter resistor, the two of those connect, and basically that is something like a common base amplifier in that you're injecting signal into the emitter of the 2N3906. When you inject signal into there, the thing behaving like a common base amplifier has no inversion, and since it does not invert, then the output voltage and the input voltage are true with one another, and the result is positive feedback. And as you dial this knob down from 1 megohm, you start out with whenever you start this circuit, you start it with the thing dialed wide open to 1 megohm. And as you start dialing the 1 megohm potentiometer to lower and lower resistances, you'll find that the knob on your bench supply, the amount that you can wiggle it before you go from rail to rail on the output voltage gets smaller and smaller. In other words, the amount of knob rotation, the number of degrees of knob rotation that you can turn the dial on your power supply becomes smaller and smaller. And there is some point where you can't turn it at all. You'll hit a point where the meter will just be, you know, the needle on the meter will just be wandering all over the dial and kind of aimlessly and just almost breathing on the instrument is enough to get the thing to swing one way or the other. It's just the pot on the on the control knob on the bench supply becomes so incredibly sensitive that it just refuses to be biased almost. If you turn the 1 megohm pot to a lower value than that, you get DC regeneration, and positive DC feedback is effectively a latch. You get hysteresis is the other word that they use for this. And you will experience this, because whenever you hit that point, you will turn up the dial, and all of a sudden the meter will respond. And then you go, oh, I've gone too far, and you have to back the dial down quite a bit more before it will respond the other way. And it wants to stay stuck. It's like no matter what you did with your dial, you've overcompensated. And there's no way that you can ever get it teased to where it's in the middle of the dial. That's positive feedback. In other words, you've gone over, the circuit inherently had a little bit of negative feedback, and whenever you dial past that point on the 1 megohm resistor, you start getting positive feedback, and the circuit, the whole net circuit now is a positive feedback circuit. Okay? So you've got a chance to experience the normal state of the thing, which has some inherent negative feedback within it, and a point where you go right through infinite gain and a little bit past infinite gain, and that's controlled by the 1 megohm potentiometer, and a little bit past infinite gain, you start getting a situation where you have hysteresis, and it's now positive feedback, and you there's no way you can get any kind of quiescent voltage out of it. It wants to flip to full voltage or nothing. It won't take anything in between. Okay, now we're going to assume that you've played with this for a while and you've adjusted this 1 megohm pot so that it is right there at the point where it, you know, gives you, you know, it allows you to get stability. It allows you to actually center the, you know, get the meter to actually wiggle around the middle of the voltage range, but not to the point that it has any hysteresis in it, but yet it's as sensitive as it possibly can be. We're going to assume that you've done that. Now, I want to back away for just a little bit and point out that the MOSFET is run, it's a voltage follower, and it's run by the 9-volt battery. Now, the reason that I have a 9-volt battery in there, when you already have a power supply, it's a voltage follower. It shouldn't matter as long as the voltage of the power supply is high enough that the circuit can function. Except for one little problem. The load that the MOSFET generates, and with this circuit as critical as it is, the fact that you are just barely able to twitch the dial ever so slightly and it causes major effects in the output, that would cause the circuit not to work, because what would happen is there's so much interaction between the loading effect that's going right now through that 9-volt transistor radio battery. If it weren't for it delivering the output, if your voltage source had to deliver the output, this would inject enough noise back into your power supply that none of this stuff would work. And I tried this on the bench. I finally ended up putting a battery in there because I just could not make it work. Okay, enough said about that. But that's why you need the battery. You know, you normally wouldn't, except that in this case, things are so incredibly critical that any additional loading effect on that bench supply and you can't make it. You can't reach any kind of a stability point inside there. Okay, now let's go on to the second. Well, assume that you've got it set so that it's actually running right at infinite voltage gain. Which, after a while, playing with it, you'll get there. And you'll be able to reliably switch it on the next day. You might have to tweak the voltage on your homemade power supply or whatever a little bit to get it so that it's right there at the point where it's in quiescent mode, you know, where the needle isn't at one of the rail or the other. If you put an oscilloscope on this thing, you'll see all kinds of noise. I mean, you'll see noise from your power supply, you'll see noise from the air, radio stations, you'll see all kinds of stuff. This thing is really, really sensitive. It has been said of noise that you could be in the middle of the Sahara Desert or on the polar ice cap, you know, 3,000 miles from any kind of an electrical piece of equipment and still pick up a 60 hertz AC hum and 50 hertz AC hum and all the other, you know, there's an awful lot of electrical activity on this planet that will provide, you know, long wave, signal for your amplifier to pick up. I don't know if it's true, although I would point out that they get long-wave communications at 6 kilohertz. You can whistle at 6 kilohertz. You know, 6 kilohertz is not that high. It's certainly not what you think of as radio frequency. And they can set up global communications, you know, using Morse code or something. They can do global communications at 6 kilohertz. It is amazing how far ultra long wave goes. And so the stretch that the world's power equipment, which is much more powerful than these long wave transmitters, the stretch that the Earth's, you know, electrical activity, if you had a sensitive enough amplifier, you'd probably be able to pick it up. Okay, having said that, getting back to this whole idea of once you've got this unwieldy super high gain amplifier, I'll avoid calling it a real honest to goodness infinite gain amp, but at the same time, it sure gets close to it. Okay? So now we put in some negative feedback deliberately. I suggested that you start with a 10k ohm resistor. You'll probably want to try several, because different size resistors will give you different impedances, or, well, you know, different gain factors and so on. But an interesting thing to point out in all of this is that with a negative feedback resistor going back into the base of the 2N3904, say it's 10K, doesn't really matter too much what it is, the input impedance looking into this whole circuit, the signal that you put into that never really gets to the base, because this circuit has so much gain that it will do with its output through that 10k ohm resistor whatever it has to do to null the current at the summing node that is the input of this amplifier. And if you have a circuit that has so much gain that even through a 10k ohm resistor it can completely null the AC current wave that you're putting in to the input, then this amplifier's input impedance, ignoring the impedance that is generated by the 200 ohm microfarad DC blocking AC coupling cap, ignoring that, the input impedance of this circuit is zero. And, of course, the input impedance changes radically if you happen to overdrive this amplifier. If you get enough signal into the input that the output has gone all the way up to one of the rails, you know, it's either gone all the way positive or all the way down to ground, and it's slammed against it and no longer can provide any more voltage, at that point, yes, some signal does get into the base. But as long as you don't allow that to happen, as long as your signal is low enough signal coming into the input, you know, the amplitude is low enough that it isn't able to drive the amplifier either into clipping on either side of the output. It never reaches, you know, 100% and it never goes down to zero. And you got an oscilloscope on there. If you come back and try and measure that signal on the input of the amplifier, it's almost gone. And it's really amazing that this circuit can do this. It doesn't. It's like the base doesn't have any voltage on it, and yet because of the incredible gain this thing has, it's able to generate an output voltage. The output voltage is all going through that resistor, is all being used to counter what you're putting in. Well, several things come to mind whenever you do that. What about things like the noise generated? I mean, the transistors are semiconductor devices, and there is, you know, forward bias junction noise, a little bit, anyway, between the emitter and base. Well, as it turns out, that little bit of noise that's in there gets amplified just as much. And so that's why if you had a perfect lab supply that was absolutely quiet, You put the whole thing inside of a Faraday cage so that there wasn't any effect from the world's electrical equipment. You did everything in your power. You would still have noise from the semiconductors themselves. You can't get away from the noise in this circuit because the gain is just way too high. In fact, you actually would be able to turn down the resistance of the 1 megohm potentiometer just a tad and get just that much more gain out of it. In other words, basically, because you are in control and you are trying to seek the highest gain possible, your gain factors in this thing will adjust to meet the noise level. And so you just get closer to infinity is all, and then start having to concern yourself with the emitter-based junction noise that occurs inside. And then, resistors contribute to noise a little bit at some point. Even if you had the world's most perfect transistor, you would still have noise from that. There's just no getting around it. This stuff, noise will happen, and you can't stop it. But it's a fascinating circuit. You should play around with it a little bit, see if some of these things that I've said are true. I know they are. And I'm sure you'll have fun discovering them. Another thing. The fact that the two collectors that tie together are actually, it's an infinite impedance. You know, they're just constant current sources. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're not really providing any resistance to anything. And the fact that the gate input of the MOSFET is, it's insulated. It's just a field effect device. It's an electrostatic field is what's doing all the control. There's no electrical connection at all. It's insulated. So what happens if you put a meter on that probe? You put your meter probe on the two collectors where they come together with the gate. Well, if you do that, you now have an impedance, and you're now limiting the amplifier's ability to perform. You can actually calculate using the ratio of the now the meter is now your collector impedance because it has resistance, and it will drastically limit the amount of gain that you can get, and it doesn't take very much of a load to do that either. So this is a kind of a very special sort of magical circuit, and there's a lot to be learned for. From playing with it, with the concepts that I've thrown out here. Anyway, have fun with it.